know what? The thing I found as well, people downloading podcasts, like, I'm surprised how many people download as opposed to streaming.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of like a planning thing. I don't know. I'd love to say I'm on the fly and I just, I'm going to listen to that one now. But I quite like having a little like secret bank of ones like saved. I'm like, oh, I've got a car journey or, you know, whatever it is. I'm going on a walk or I don't know. Yeah.
I tend to like listen to podcasts and audiobooks like when I'm doing like long rides that are sort of pretty steady and casual. That's when I tend to listen to them. And then I don't know, it seems to make the time go really quickly. But then, ironically, by the way, I am recording. You'll probably see this random.
I saw the red light. That was okay.
For example, today, I didn't actually, I normally, like, if I've got some of my training sessions, if they're pretty casual and easy, I will listen to podcasts. But today I did it indoors because I had quite a lot of stuff to sort out just generally.
Yeah.
And I ended up watching a film. And I watched this film. It was a recommendation to me yesterday. And yeah. I've got to find what it's called now. It really freaked me out with the sort of the current global pandemic we're in, like, yeah, really freaked me out. It was on Netflix and it was cool. Come on, tell me where it is. Where is my list on Netflix? it's something like containment or contagion, something like that. And it's basically you can kind of guess what it's about, can't you?
You're gonna say it's about the pandemic, aren't you? Or a pandemic.
Contagion. So it's about
a relaxing, was that a relaxing watch?
No, it really wasn't. Because I watched it and I was like, why? Literally everything in it, I was like, shit, this has kind of already happened. Like, to the current situation.
When was it filmed?
It's filmed, I think it's 2017 it came out. And it's got like, got a pretty like well-known cast in it, so it's like got Matt Damon's in it and Gwyneth Paltrow's in it, but she dies within about 10 minutes of the film going on. And
oh, now you've just ruined it. I would have watched it. No, I wouldn't. I definitely wouldn't. I think I saw the trailer really near the beginning of Corona when it struck. And I might have even like clicked play for like the first 5 minutes before I realized, actually, I don't think I could watch this right now. But now we're a bit further along, you know.
Yeah, I slightly regret watching it, but it kept me absorbed and entertained for like however long the film was. I had like a 2.5 hour session today, and it kept me absorbed for a lot. And I was just like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't watch it. I'm not good with scary films anyway, so I don't think that really helped. I watched another film. I've been talking about films a lot recently. Was called God, I've got to remember what this one's called as well. It's a Spanish film, and it's on Prime or Netflix. It's on one of them. I can't remember which one, but it's basically about. I'm going to find it because I messaged my mate and told him to watch it as well. It is called. Come on, where is it in the messages? The Platform.
Ooh, I'm writing this down. I like to make lists. The Platform.
The Platform.
Recommend?
Yeah. Spanish film. Really interesting concept. I watched it in Spanish with subtitles on. Because I'm a bit dyslexic. So
yeah.
I normally have to watch things twice anyway in these situations. But I always feel that if you watch it with the correct dialect on like international films, you always get a better a better feel for it and like the emotion and stuff like that in it.
But definitely.
Good film.
Oh, okay. So I'm adding it to my list. Talking of international films, actually, I watched. Have you heard of The Parasite?
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
Yeah. Have you also seen some of his other films?
No. Do I want to? I mean, I enjoyed it, but it was, gosh, it got dark, which I thought it would.
Okay. I got another one by that director to watch called Okja.
Okja.
It's on Netflix. Definitely on Netflix. It's O-K-J-A.
Okay.
It's got a pretty good cast in it, like Jake Gyllenhaal's in it, and there's like a couple of... He plays a character that you wouldn't expect him to play, which is quite interesting. Yeah, that's another good film.
Intriguing. I think I watched The Parasite way too late at night. It was a...
Yeah, bad idea.
I enjoyed it, but it was mildly disturbing towards the end without ruining it for anyone.
Okja is... You can watch that late at night. It's not that bad.
Okay. Like,
but it's an the concept's very interesting. And then another one that I think it's the same director, Snowpiercer.
Oh, Snowpiercer.
So Snowpiercer, there's a film and they've just brought out a TV series on Netflix, which is about the same thing. The film's like, I don't know, probably, it might even be 10 years old now. Like, it's a bit older.
Yeah.
But they're not set at the same time. It's the same thing, but one's set like... I think 100 years or 50 years ahead of the... So the film is set like 50 or 100 years ahead of the TV series.
Oh, but interesting.
The film is really good. It's a super interesting concept. Equally, the TV series is really good. And it was one of those series on Netflix that they bring out a new episode every week. And I was like, come on, I just want to binge watch it.
Oh, yeah. Don't drip feed it like that. But do they even do that anymore? I feel like everything drops and it's just there.
No, it was one that was a new episode each week.
Oh,
and it was, and it came out on Thursday because I was following it.
Yeah, Thursday at 6 p.m. That's like delayed gratification, isn't it? Like the ability to just be like, you know, it's fine. Got to wait 1 week, which we're probably all not very good at anymore. Everything's so instant.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? As a society now, we're very much like demanding things instantly. You know. Instant, it's little things like instant payment as well, like you pay with your phone, pay with your watch.
Yeah.
And that actually, I think, segues quite nicely into who you are.
Ah.
So, because I've got Zoe here. I haven't really introduced you, who's somewhere. Are you in London?
I'm not. I'm actually in Switzerland. I'm in Verbier in the Swiss Alps.
Okay, you're further away than I thought you were.
Yeah.
And I'm jealous. you're from Sun God, and Sun God, one of the things that for me that's quite cool about Sun God, first of all, is you've just bought out new cycling range, which I wear, and I'm sure people that listen to this will have seen photographs of them. I'm a big fan of the Vulcans, first of all, because my dad is a massive Star Trek fan.
Really? I love it.
A massive Star Trek fan, and I told him that these glasses were called Vulcans, and he was like, "That's great." And he's very blunt.
I'm in.
He's a very blunt Geordie. You're just like, "Yeah, that's cool." And
approved, sealed.
And you could have, if you could make that guy happy, Jesus. And the other one's the VLANs, isn't it? I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
We've had a lot of chat about this. We call it the VLANs, but, you know, we still have lots of different pronunciations, even within the office. So if you want to call them the VLANs, that's okay.
And they're basically a slightly smaller frame size. But what I like about them is customization, flexibility of being able to change the parts over, like, I'll be honest, I've literally dismantled mine into many pieces and re-put them back together because I can. It's pretty easy to do. And the lenses are... So for me, that's always something that I think some brands don't quite get right is lenses. But the lenses are banging. Like, they're really, really good. And I can imagine that is like... ridiculously hard to like the testing in lenses and the quality of lenses is something that must be a really like long process to just get them right. And they're really, really good.
It really is. That's really cool to hear, because that is something that really differentiates us as a brand and something we've worked very hard on for a number of years to get right. Working closely with our manufacturing partners time and time again, and testing and more samples and different colours. And yeah, that's really cool to hear that you've noticed that, and hopefully others have too.
I'm a big fan of Vulcan with black and gold, because I also have a black and gold helmet, and it all looks really cool.
I saw that on Instagram, so yeah, I'm a fan of the gold.
Yeah, I never was much of a lover of gold, but for some reason I'm going through this phase of really liking black and gold.
Bling.
It just works. It super works. But yeah, anyway, what I think is really cool about what you guys do is, first of all, customization. As someone who's an absolute stickler for individual stuff, so for example, I go to the point of like hunting down limited edition, for example, my helmet sponsor is Laser, and when we sort of started working together, I was like, what have you got? My first message to the guy that I deal with was like, what is the most unique helmet that you guys have? And he was and he was kind of like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, because for me it was about like trying to find something a bit interesting and different.
Yeah,
and it's the story behind it. And it's been like a long discussion about working with Laser, and he at the World Championship, the Road World Champs in Yorkshire, they bought out the Laser Genesis helmet, but they bought it out in like a bronze.
Ooh.
And they were only given to people that were racing at the World Champs in Yorkshire. And basically I was like trying to see if I could get hold of one, because I was like, that is such a cool helmet. And lo and behold, they had one in the office, and it's probably my most worn helmet that I now own, because it's different. But yeah, what's so nice about Sun God as well is the customization, that you can make it as different as you want on the website. It's like,
definitely, kind of, yeah,
I'm true in that sense for me. And yeah, they're really cool, really, really cool.
That was cool to hear, because that's something I think we've been custom from the very beginning, which is quite different to what everyone else is doing. But it's exactly that. We sort of, you know, you still see a lot of the big major brands, you know, in the colours that they've brought out for that season. But with us, we're trying to kind of, I guess, give the customer a better experience and actually be able to, you know, order a stealth pair if they want, but then also have a wacky pair for, you know, longer rides, or, you know, with our lifestyle range, even just for parties or weddings, you know, it varies. But yeah, that's certainly not something we're going to change, I don't think.
Yeah, I think it's like a really, like direct to consumer as well. It just, you know, it helps keep the prices really attractive to people, I think, as well. But what like kind of interests me quite a lot about how Sun God started was you launched it originally on Indiegogo, and then with the ski side, you went on to Kickstarter. That's right, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. So, we launched on Indiegogo back in 2013. So that's scary, like 7 years ago now. which, time flies, which, yeah, it was quite a leap of faith, to be honest. We were both in, my business partner and husband, Ali, and I were both in jobs at the time. I remember we exported, it sounds very scientific, we exported all of our contacts, you know, so from Facebook or LinkedIn at the time. I don't really use LinkedIn much now, but and sort of sent them all a message saying, you know, help us escape the office jobs, which set the ball rolling, certainly on our campaign. And we, you know, we had friends backing it to begin with, family, obviously, who probably just felt obligated to back it. And then it kind of went from there, and slowly over the next few weeks, I think, you know, people saw the campaign, they saw what we were trying to do with our sunglasses, how we were trying to do things a bit differently, and yeah, sort of snowballed from there, I guess.
Literally snowballed.
No pun intended. The campaign went a lot bigger than we kind of anticipated. I think we had a target to sell a few hundred pairs, which in hindsight probably wouldn't have been enough to actually get us off the ground. We luckily sold a few thousand pairs, which really confirmed the concept to us that there was a market out there for people who, you know, didn't want the throwaway sunglasses, but they, you know, didn't want or couldn't afford to pay the big money for the really high quality brands. And we were trying to bring that quality at a fair value price, really. So it definitely was better than going to a bank and saying, please will you invest in our sunglasses business that we know nothing relatively about. I back crowdfunding the whole way. I don't really recommend the
way to it's interesting because it's the whole crowdfunding thing. I think it's become like, you would have been very early as an early onsetter to start. I mean, in my perception, like early onsetter into actually doing that as a brand. Like, it seems to be now in 2020, we are in 2020, the year that's it does seem to be that it's very much like the kind of go-to thing that people do. But like back then, I mean 2012 was when I graduated from uni, and it was kind of something I was pretty switched on. Like, people were doing it, but it wasn't really a massive thing. Not compared to now.
No, you're right. It wasn't actually. It was Ali that discovered it, and then we sort of started looking into it. And we both knew it would be something quite public and, you know, scary in a way. But I think in some ways that sort of really focuses you. You know, you're about to put, you know, something you've worked quite hard on the side of a job. You're going to put it out there quite publicly in front of the world to see and everyone you know and love. It sort of gives you that fire in your belly, really, to just go, right, this video and this, you know, it really makes you interrogate things, because it's a sort of make or break situation, really. We did it so that you either hit your target and you go into production or you don't. So it was really all or nothing, but it was a great way. And yeah, like you said, we then did a couple of years later go on to launch our ski goggles on Kickstarter. Which by that point we had a bit of a brand following, so customers who had tried and tested the sunglasses and who were like, great, yeah, you know, I trust them, when you know, I ski as well, or I snowboard, I'm gonna get behind them. So that was quite an exciting launch.
Yeah, it's interesting as well, because like I always think like the outdoor, like my background is very pigeoned into cycling, but I always think of outdoor more generally. Like, cycling is a niche of a niche of a niche, probably of a niche of the outdoor sector. And then like, skiing is a much larger section of outdoor, and like skiing, snowboarding, all that side of it. And do you know, I'll be honest, I've never been skiing or snowboarding. It's been something has been on my list for a very long time. I just haven't done it. And
we can change that this winter.
Yeah, we can travel. It's definitely something that needs to be changed. I mean, I've pretty much got two left feet, so it could be hilarious.
You can road cycle, though. I feel like, you know, I feel like there is a lot of core balance and crossover skills, perhaps. I mean, conversely, I only got into road cycling a few years ago, relative to skiing, which I've been doing for years. But I think that they're both quite addictive as sports. And, you know, whether you're skiing or snowboarding, I've never snowboarded, only ever skied. There's a certain adrenaline and kind of addictive that goes into that sport as well. And just being fully outside in the elements, it's quite a good escape, I think, from work, from other stuff, other areas of your life.
Yeah, I think it's quite one other thing that always interests me as well is that, like, I know a lot of cyclists that ski and snowboard in the off season.
Yeah.
Their argument is it's really good for like increasing like your VO2 max, so oxygen through your blood, that side of it. But I'd never really thought about it, and then I went into geeky podcast mode and started listening to really proper geeky science style podcasts about training and nutrition, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and I was like, and then all of them, they do backcountry skiing in the winter.
Yeah, that's another level. That's like super. Yeah, the fitness there you get. Some of my cousins in Norway, they do that, and yeah, it's another level, I think.
Yeah, it just sounds like pretty mental, but like, is it there? You're very right. Like, there is definitely a connection with, you know, that association with being outside and in the outdoors world. And for me, that's something that's so, you know, quite important with cycling, is that I, for me, you're going at a pace that's like slow enough that you absorb a lot of what's going on around you, and you can look at, but also fast enough that you can actually cover some distance, like compared to like if you go for a hike, like
totally.
I like hiking as well, but like you're very limited in how much you can see over a certain period of time. But like riding, you could ride, you know, kilometers of thousands, hundreds of kilometers in a day and see so much in that time.
Totally. Yeah. It's also
so
when you ride around here, a lot of it obviously is uphill. So actually sometimes looking down and just being like, wow, I mean, I don't do anything like the distances that you cover, I'm sure, but like looking down is quite cool and just realizing, whoa, like I've come quite a long way. Like it's very cool in that regard.
I have cycled in Switzerland purely because I crossed over the border.
Okay.
I've not properly, like, I've seen, like, some of the climbs and stuff, like, the tour of Switzerland, and, like, oh, my God, like, it's incredible. It's another place that, as I say, has been on my radar because of what I've seen in, like, pro races, really, and friends that have been and ridden out there as well. Like, there's like, an Instagram account called Cycling in Switzerland, and I
just follow
that. Oh. Yeah, and it's all, like, I think it's, like, associated to the tourism board. I'm not certain, but
possibly, but it's a big part of the cycling here is pretty phenomenal. It's in fact I'm actually, this is gonna sound crazy, I think I'm yet to do like a flat ride. A few friends have been like, oh, we've cycled out here to, you know, to go there, and it was great, it was flat. So I'm looking forward to that, but I think most of my rides in the last few years have only been uphill. I look forward to a flat ride around here, to go up to a lake maybe, a lot of the places you want to get to here, just like the lakes are higher up in the mountain, or you know, there's places to go. So
I know that, like in London, to get elevation is really, really hard because it's flat. I rep hills to try and get elevation. And everyone's just and like it's kind of the only choice you have in London, really, is to go up and down the same hill. So on once a week I do this thing which is called it's just like something I do for my amusement. It's a 20 rep challenge. So it's 20 reps of a climb in London. And last week I did it up Swains Lane, which is like, which they use for like a hill climb and stuff like that. And it's a horrible climb. It's horrible. It's just steep and unnecessary, and like it's probably like to do 20 reps, you're kind of average, you're probably doing between 3.5 and 5.5 minutes on the reps, depending on how buggered you are and how far into that 20 you are.
20 times 3.5 to 5.5.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
Yeah, I did Swains last week and I did not enjoy it. So
you've done that now for the month.
Yeah, I've done that one. I don't know what one's going to be next, but yeah, like, we're not.
No. We have to come out to Switzerland at some point and experience some of the hills out here. We won't make you do reps.
Yeah, I don't have to do any reps of them.
One's enough here.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, like, so then you bought, so I'm guessing, what made you want to then go into cycling with your eyewear?
Well, I think from the beginning, really, we've the materials that we've used in our products sort of have naturally lent themselves to performance and sports. So even our lifestyle, if you like, the everyday pair we launched with had the kind of materials that people were taking them on runs or, you know, on rides, casual rides here and there. Because of the, you know, the memory plastic and it being so durable. I guess since then it's been, we've always had, you know, different sports in our eyeline, if you like. After launching into goggles, we knew, like, I think the next sport really is cycling. And we did launch our kind of pace breaker range back in 2017. And we sort of found it was really targeted at lots of different sport. It was kind of an all-round sport, some cycling, triathlon, running. But the majority of our customer base seemed to be using them for cycling. And they were feeding back, they were loving them, and we were in quite a lot of contact with them about how to, you know, they were great, but, you know, could you do this? Have you thought about doing this? So that's really where it takes a long time, I think, to develop a performance product. So we were taking feedback from those guys who had become kind of ambassadors for us as customers. And listening to what they wanted to change, and, you know, they're core cyclists, could you bring this? So that really culminated in our recent Vulcans and Velans launch, which was a long time coming, but super exciting to finally get to that point, especially with Corona and everything, which, you know, has delayed everyone in different ways. It was it felt even sweeter, I think, to finally get it out there to market to our existing customers and new ones, really.
How did you find the kind of global pandemic as a company? I mean, obviously, you know, with manufacturing, I'm presuming manufacturing is probably in the Far East. Like, it must have been an onset delay on that, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. It was an uncertain time. I think when it first broke, we had to really make the decision, you know, are we going to still go for this launch? Can we still commit to it as a business? Is it the right thing we should be doing? Is it reckless? You know, what if everything shuts down? So that was quite a big conversation, I think, to have. But we knew, you know, we'd been working on it for such a long time. We really wanted to bring it, you know, we wanted to launch it a few months earlier than we did, you know, because naturally, there were delays, shipping was delayed, you know, manufacturing, there was, you know, shutdowns for a few weeks, everything sort of, there was a moment during the launch where it felt like every week there was, you know, something being delayed, but
yeah.
I think we knew that as a brand, kind of innovation has always been at the forefront of what we're doing, and we're trying to bring things that are better, that are different, that are new. So although it took longer, we knew we kind of, it was sort of a no-brainer, we knew we couldn't really just, you know, pan it. We wanted to sort of drive it through, even though we ended up launching in July, but in some ways that was no bad thing, you know, that was at the peak of the summer when everyone was actually out there riding, and sure, we, you know, we might have missed a few people who had already bought their summer pair, but it felt even better to actually launch despite all the, you know, the complexity and the wiggly line, if you like, of planning that didn't go as smoothly as we might have hoped, but hopefully that didn't show from the outside, you know.
I think everyone like, it doesn't really matter what your business was or whatever it was, everybody was in the same situation trying to make the best
exactly
going on. And like, I've heard some friends of mine who have their own business, I was talking to them about it over the weekend. I sort of say, like, how for you? And they were just like, well, we had to have that very serious conversation of like, is that the end of the line? Is this the end of our business? And I was just like, shit, that's a horrible situation to be in. Like, I can vouch for it firsthand. Like, I actually got made redundant from my day job because of losing work. Like, and which is, there's strengths and weaknesses to that. The weakness is that I have a set income. The strength is that I actually can do a lot more of the freelance work, which I was anyway doing. But I've got so many like freelance projects on. It means I can properly focus on them. So strengths and weaknesses.
It's funny how those things happen, though, isn't it? Like, I do think when lockdown started for us, we'd, you know, like any small business owner, we've been, you know, running ourselves ragged, super busy, you know, trying to juggle it all as everyone is. And in some ways, although it was a scary business time, it does give you a bit of time to reflect as a business, as a person, you know, what am I adding? Where am I adding value to this business? You know, what could I be doing? Could we be taking in more as a team? And I think we, you know, I'm really proud of our team that we did that, and we sort of, it forces you to sort of think, right, what are we working on this week? And is it really going to move the dial? And is it the right thing? Is it the right sentiment for the market at the moment? You know, I think there are definitely some silver linings in reflecting on actually how do you want your life to be, what work do you want to be doing, you know, what's adding value, I think.
Yeah, there's such a high proportion of people who were furloughed, for example. Like,
yeah.
To me, if I was furloughed, that'd be such a great opportunity to use that as a as a way, as a kickstart to something more creative or unique, or, you know, to learn a language, whatever it was. But I mean, come on, you get so much time back of your... I know people who are furloughed who are like, oh, I'm so bored. And I was like,
yeah,
I really want to strangle you for saying that.
You're getting paid and...
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah. So, like, it's interesting. So, I mean, because it's a global pandemic, I feel like some people haven't quite understood the severity of it. It is a regular conversation that comes up in this podcast, and because it's so poignant of our current situation, but also, like, I actually started the podcast when I was in Spain as lockdown came in Spain, which is kind of funny, but it was a bit, yeah, at the time. I'd gone out to Spain with a few friends of mine, and we'd gone out there. I'd just done a gravel race in Morocco, and I had a very bad crash in that race, which I have never really said how bad it was. I sort of have, but I've never really gone into much detail about it. But long and short of it, I had a back injury last year, which was caused by me having a fight with a van, and I lost. It was quite bad. But basically, I herniated a disc in my back, and it was like this recurring injury I was trying to deal with and cope with. And this gravel race in Morocco, I crashed out there, made it a lot worse again. Anyway, we went out to Spain, to Calpe, basically as a way for me, first of all, to, like, for me, I went because it was like, okay, I'm just going to go riding with my mates, bit of sun,
yeah,
you know, enjoy the company, just enjoy the riding and, you know, get back riding again. And anyway, I think it was like, we were only out there for like a week. And when we went out there, like, the whole COVID thing was kind of, it was obviously known about, but everyone just thought it was like, people were probably a bit naive and were thinking like, it's not in Europe yet, for example.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, in sort of the middle of the week, I remember going out for a ride and then coming back to where we were staying. We're just staying in this Airbnb. And basically, there were, like, police cars, like, patrolling the area. And they were, talking out of, like, the tannoy system, effectively stay indoors and all that sort of stuff. And we were all just like, bollocks, this is actually pretty damn serious. And so it then became this, like, scramble to try and get a flight back to the UK.
I bet.
Because the airline I flew with, which was EasyJet, I don't mind discussing it, they cancelled every single flight. So it was just like, they sent a message out saying, like, oh, we're going to do repatriation flights, but they're on a first-come, first-served basis. And to which I was like, I'm just going to pay over the odds and get a flight home.
Just get me home.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I did. We all did that in the end and got home. But, like, it still felt like people weren't taking it seriously. Like, when the plane landed, like, people were cheering because they're like, oh, you know, we've escaped it. And I'm just thinking in my head, I was like, are you that fucking stupid? Like, we're probably the people bringing it to the UK.
Yeah. It's in Europe. It's not going to be long. Like,
Exactly. I mean, it's a very interesting... I mean, it's interesting because it's providing a situation where I think in, like, you know, maybe in, like, 6 months to a year's time, we're going to see loads of really well thought through, exciting new businesses that are starting to pop up because someone's just gone, I've lost my job, or I've been made furlough, and I'm 100% going to go for it and just see what happens. And that's really exciting.
That is a really good silver lining, and I really, really hope so. I think it will. I hope that's the case. And I hope it also gives people a bit of a chance to go, actually, is this what I want to be doing? You know, I might have been made redundant, or I'm still doing it but not enjoying it, or whatever. It's kind of like a reset button. I know that that's obviously putting a nice point on it. Notwithstanding all the chaos that Corona has provided, but at least I do think it's given some people some headspace to actually zoom out of their lives a little bit. It certainly did us as a business and like personally. Maybe a bit more time, certainly like for people to get outside. Like I was on my bike way more than I would have been. I wasn't, you know, working from home. You lose the commuting, so to speak, and you lose the, you know, the extra time that you're spent. You know, for me, it was dropping my daughter at nursery. I didn't have to do that anymore. Obviously, I had to look after her half the time. but I did have that extra time to just be like, you know what? What's important? I'm going to get out on my bike and then I'm going to work and I'm going to split those things and make sure, you know, I can only do one at a time and really focus on those. So yeah, certainly a change for everyone, I think.
So in Switzerland, is your daughter, I don't know how old your daughter is, but is she back at school or nursery, or is it still like homeschooling as well?
No, so she's just recently turned one. So she is starting secondary school. Yeah, very advanced. The Swiss, you know, they like to educate them early. We went from a situation she'd only been in nursery probably a few short months. So I'd had to get back to the business and everything. And then suddenly it was like, right, you know, childcare is shut. So me and Ali sort of had we had to, you know, tag team it. It was like, right, we're sort of 50-50 in this business, you know. So I did, what was it? I worked the mornings because I'm a morning person, and he looked after Kaya. And in the afternoons we switched. And, you know, I'll put it simply, it was a very simple routine, but it sort of worked for quite a while anyway. You know, I'm summarizing here, but, you know, it did work. And it meant, you know, my afternoons were fully off and I had to look after her. We didn't have any help. We live away from family, which was hard, to be honest. But we sort of had to divide and conquer, you know. But now things have opened up. So in fact, he's going back to nursery for the first day tomorrow, which is cool. We'll see how that goes. So that we've had some friends helping us here and there, and more recently a bit of help at home, which is kind of been needed with the Pace series launch and everything else. So we've muddled through like everyone. I think it's been ups and downs. You know, some weeks you're loving it, it's full on, you know.
You just kind of make it at the end of the day.
Yeah, you have to, really. I think it's probably been one of those situations. It's fully out of all of our hands. I mean, you'd like to think it's in the hands of the politicians who are managing it. You know, I hope they're taking that seriously. But, you know, it was one of those situations. There's nothing really you can do. We thought about coming back to the UK and, you know, seeing my family and maybe even, you know, moving in there. But at the time, it just wasn't actually an option. With travel and, you know, border controls and everything. So it was one of those situations. No one really had much say, really. Good question. It's the simple answer, the short answer. No, it's great. It is great. It's very different. I'd love to know some stats, how many other people do that, or if there's anyone listening who does the same. You know,
it's quite a, like, I'm gonna advance tell you this. So where I live, there's this ice cream truck that is, I don't know how the guy does it, but his sirens. Yeah. I don't know if you can hear it.
Yeah,
it's so loud.
Really.
Yeah, like, so I can he's probably like five streets away at the moment and I can hear it.
Do we have to wrap things up? Do you need to go?
No. Like, I mean, I always need ice cream, you know.
I mean, always.
He gets nearer and nearer. As he gets nearer and nearer, it's louder and louder. So if you hear it, like ice cream truck noise, you know what it is.
I love it.
And it was, I did one of the podcasts I did with a guy called Cam Mason, who's like a young Scottish cyclocross rider who I've known for quite a long time. The start of the podcast, all you can hear is this freaking ice cream truck.
That's fine. If I'm talking about, you know, how Ali and me, how we work together, if it's drowned out by the ice cream, that's okay, you know.
But you're right, it is an interesting It is interesting, like, couples running businesses. Like, I can't think of many, I'll be honest.
No, I think, I guess, yeah, I think it is quite a unique thing. I think we originally had a small, like, bobble hat company that we started together on the side when we were working in London. So that was, like, literally crocheting bobble hats. So it would be, like, was at my job in London, like, no, can't come for a night out tonight, got 5 hats to make, and so I'll see you tomorrow. It was like winter ski hats. That's sort of where it started, and then we both had jobs, and we were kind of, I was quite stressed out by my job, it was really fast paced, like FMCG, and Ali was in property and nothing was really being built, so he was at the opposite end of the spectrum, which I think can be almost worse than being too stressed. And so, yeah, we were both kind of looking for things we could do and looking for kind of a market we could disrupt. And then it went from there. So I think we've got better at it, to be honest. I think we're very, very different, which I think is good. I think it's probably partly why Sun God has been a success so far. We have very different skills. So I guess the bigger we've grown, we've been able to really just own those and not, you know, being communication the whole time about, you know, this is a joint decision. We've been able to just go, right, I trust you, you know, you do that, I'll do this. But yeah, it certainly has its challenges. I think we're still learning as well, you know, how we can keep business separate, and how when you're quite passionate about something, you want to talk about it all the time. You know, oh, by the way, like, I spoke to him and, you know, I did this and this happened, which is great. And then it's knowing when to be like, let's just not talk about it. Oh, let's pick up on it tomorrow if we need to, you know, let's have a night to just us. I think it'll be a
constant. The kit that I wear, the Atticus, they're a couple.
Are they?
Yeah. They're a couple, and
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so they've been together as long as I've known them, and I've known Emily and Jimmy for 5 years, I think. They've been together as long as I've known them, and there's quite a few like similarities. So like, they both worked, one worked as like in like journalism, and one worked in, I don't even know what he did, investment banking maybe?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I definitely know, I've definitely been told.
Yeah.
I probably switched off because it sounded boring. And yeah, they basically, you know, they set up Atticus on their, as a part-time thing, like they did it in their own time. And slowly, it meant that Jimmy could, first of all, Jimmy left his job because it was in an industry he didn't enjoy, and he kind of rolled into it, and then he became like full-time on Atticus, and then Emily sort of like went to part-time hours, and then eventually she quit as well, and then they moved north, and when they moved north they went full-time on Atticus.
That's so cool to hear.
Yeah, so and they're a couple, and like I was with them over the weekend. I went up to see them, and it was just really, they're like two of my closest mates.
Yeah,
like really nice to know that they're doing well, and like they're a couple. I believe, I'm not certain how correct this is, but I believe they were one of the first not same sex civil partnerships in the UK.
Oh wow!
Yeah, because they were. I think that's right, because like it was like you think of, basically they were like, we want to be committed to each other forever, but we don't like the idea of marriage and a wedding.
Yeah.
So the civil partnership thing was the way they did it,
and
which I thought was really interesting. And it's, there's the ice cream truck.
Oh, I can hear it.
You hear it. He's really close. He's like 1 or 2 away.
He's not missing anyone with that. He's like, right, crank it up.
It is the bit, honestly, if you're down like on the street, I live on the 4th floor in a block of flats.
Yeah.
If you're on the streets, it is so loud.
Noise cancelling headphones on.
Yeah, honestly. Like, it is so loud. I didn't even know ice cream trucks could go that loud.
He's probably breaking some law, you know, but it's worth it because everyone knows there's ice cream.
Yeah, I mean, he probably is deaf as a dodo anyway, and that's because of the figures. But Yeah. Anyway, so they're quite an interesting. What they've done is amazing. Like, it's really, and I think it's great to see with the Atticus guys, and yeah, they're just, as I say, they're super good friends of mine, and it's I love that they.
That's really cool.
I've seen the brand grow from like the first kit all the way to their current sort of stuff they've done, which is really amazing.
And they're still together. That's good news, you know.
They work really well together because they're very different people.
Yeah.
But also they individually are so, like, when they're relaxed, I think they've sort of managed to figure out how to switch off really well, which is I think that's always a tricky thing. And I think it's probably really tricky in the current climate we're in as well for people as well. Because for me, like, I struggle to, I sometimes I realize I'm working and it's like 9 o'clock at night. And I'm like, why am I doing this? And it's just because it's like you're working at home and you just kind of totally. Get into autopilot, don't you?
Totally. Yeah. It's easy to do. And because you're passionate about it as well, it sometimes feels like, you know, it doesn't feel like work. But it's knowing, it's almost, yeah, I think the longer you perhaps work on it or you do it together as a couple, you realise, oh, actually, that's, you know, where we've fallen short before. Let's not fall into that same, you know, same habit. Let's just, you know, make sure it's in the day or it's not in the evenings. Or I think it's different for everyone, isn't it? But I think certainly that, like, a distance of you work on your bit, I'll work on mine, we'll come together. And, you know, I think that's certainly a healthy place to start.
Yeah, maybe. I've already pre-warned you this. I don't always pay for it. You're really lucky. I always ask at the end of every episode for people to give 5 tips. And I say 5 because so many people are like, why is it 5? And I'm like, because 3 is easy.
Yeah.
3, like, anything is easy. 5 is quite hard. And you're lucky because I pre-warned you. I don't always pre-warn people.
You did pre-warn me. 5 was a struggle, I'll be honest. I mean, I did only do it 5 minutes before this. I feel like I've got a solid 4 and I could throw in a 5th.
Go on.
If you want it. Okay, so we're talking life hacks, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there is a really, not obvious, sorry. It's one that I probably started a year ago. It's called the 5-Minute Journal. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's kind of, it's something I do every morning and evening. It's really short. It's kind of a really nice, like, book. It's laid out and you basically, it's a gratitude exercise. So you talk about 3 things, 3 things that you're grateful for that morning, you know, which changes every day. Sometimes they're big, sometimes they're really basic. 3 things that would make today great, which I find really, like, focuses you, like, of all the things that are going on today, what are the 3 standout things, you know, having lunch with someone, you know, or, you know, whatever it might be, or an evening out. Then an affirmation. And then at the end of the day, before you go to bed, you sort of said, like, what are 3 amazing things that happened today? And often you find they link up, you know. Normally the 3 amazing things are catching up with friends, or, you know, having a great work call, or whatever it might be. And then it always asks you what could have made today better, which I really like, because you end up seeing trends. And I'll be honest, one of mine is always should have gone to bed earlier. And then after a few days, you're like, oh, maybe I really should try and go to bed earlier, you know? I love my 5-minute journal, and I'd recommend it to anyone who maybe wants to get into writing, or, you know, just wants to kind of be a bit more mindful. So that certainly helps me. That's number 1.
Good.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's very simple, but amazing benefits, I guess. I bought one for one of my best friends and for my mum. And yeah, she doesn't always write in it, but when she does, I think she enjoys it. Another one for me is just getting outside. It's basic, but often the times where I feel bogged down, and the times you feel like you don't have the time to do it, they're the times where you almost need it more. So even if it's just like literally a 15 minute, half an hour walk, ride, I just never regret it. And it always gives me like that zoom out clarity. That was my 2nd one. More recently, it's something we haven't been able to do much during Corona, but kind of getting back to a semblance of planning. And the more, sometimes on a Sunday, quite like to like just sit down, look at the week ahead, and figure out like, have I got a sport planned in? Have I, amongst like a working week, have I got, you know, catching up with a friend when I know I'm going to be in the office or whatever it might be. So I find like, if I've already, you know, earmarked those like windows to do things, it means normally they happen, you know, in an average week. It means that you actually go through that week and you've got some semblance of balance. Otherwise, nice. I've sort of found it can get be easy to just fall into a pit hole of work.
Yeah, that's really, really good. It's very, it's just about having those focus points, isn't it? And that, like,
totally.
Talking about to me is very much about, you know, structuring and focus and being focused about what you're doing, and then giving yourself additional focus by, you know, your time when you're going out and being outside. That's your reflection time,
and completely. Having that reflection
out, you can then zoom back in again.
Definitely, definitely. And it's almost like the freedom in a way of, before I think I've shied away from, you know, that structure, but actually there's a certain amount of freedom in it, because you know that I've already banked, you know, like Wednesday night I'm playing squash, and that's, you know, I'm gonna get out on the court and I'm gonna sweat, and you know, you don't really need to think halfway through the week, oh no, you know, what am I gonna do to get myself back on track? You've already kind of planned it in. So
awesome.
So my fourth one, funnily enough, this is, you know, this is quite random given the ice cream truck situation. A life hack of mine, and it probably was more of a habit that, you know, emerged during Corona, was ice cream, vanilla ice cream with Ovaltine. It's going to sound random. Oh, not going to be for everyone. Have you tried it?
Yes.
Really? Oh, my God. It's great,
yeah.
Right?
Have you also baked with Ovaltine?
Never, no. Wait.
Do it.
What is this?
Do it. Baked with Ovaltine.
Like brownies or something.
Cakes, brownies, anything like that. Like, honestly, I love baking. And Ovaltine in baking. So if you do, like, I didn't have any eggs or anything, and I don't really eat eggs. I'm a bit funny about eggs.
Yeah.
And I baked a cake, which I used like beetroot as a base and yogurt. Ooh. Yeah. And then obviously it's got all like flour and sugar and stuff like that. Banged a load of Ovaltine in it. Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm 100% with you there. Ovaltine. And it's just such a good drink anyway. But like.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Okay.
I've had heated debates before about whether Ovaltine's healthy, and in my mind it is, you know, it's malt, it's full of vitamins and minerals, but I've been quite heavily shut down by people on it, on the topic, but you know.
It says it's healthy on the packet, so it's healthy.
Well, exactly, you know, I'm going to believe it. And then my final one is really boring and a bit basic, but it's just in the morning, just getting out of bed and just making your bed. It kind of resets me, and it's just kind of like, right, it's really easy to do, but it just is one of those things that almost it's like kind of like ticking off a to-do, you know, sometimes you need to do those things to just get motoring. And it just gives me a bit of clarity and like, right, that's done, I can head out or head into the office or whatever it might be. Not as exciting as the Ovaltine one, but
making a very good point, because like I'm the same with that. It's like every single day make my bed, because it's like it sets up your day. It's like if you don't make your bed, you're starting your day messy and lazy.
Totally. And you get in,
like, it's the first thing that you can do. For me, it's I get up, I make my bed, I have a coffee.
Yeah.
A ridiculously strong coffee, probably because I haven't slept well, you know.
See, I'm only just getting into coffee, but no, I think the ritual thing is quite nice. Like, I have a cup of tea, but you know, it's same thing. But it kind of is that semblance, maybe it's a semblance of control, because sometimes, you know, with the best will in the world, and certainly us with a growing team and things, you get pulled in lots of different directions that might say deviate from what you originally planned to do, and that's okay. But those things that make you feel, you know, like, no, I started my day as I meant to go on, you know, I control this, I'm at home before I head off or whatever, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, awesome. I think there are five definitely very solid tips, and the Ovaltine one is like the biggest life hack that I think I've heard about.
Probably can't be described as a life hack, but I just felt compelled to bring it in there. So it's Swiss actually.
It's so true. Like you don't find it. I don't often find it in London. Weirdly, I don't know why.
Really? Every now and
then, maybe I avoid it because I really like it, and I know I would just have, like, bake something or make something out of it. But yeah, honestly, the ice cream one is a damn good tip. You wait till you start making a cake with it, and then have a bit of ice cream.
I'm worried about that tip now. I'm going to try and pretend you didn't tell me that, but no. Might take it to a whole new level in this house.
Oh, man. Yeah. And I'm trying to think any other random things I've, like, chucked in baking things that I've done. Ovaltine, I think, is the one. Or, like, I've done, like, I think loads of people have done it, like, banana bread, but actually, like, putting peanut butter in it as well.
Oh, I haven't tried that.
Yeah. Or jam.
Oh, not that either. I'm a big fan of banana bread, though. I'm always let my bananas go off, and then, you know, I'm compelled to make a cake because I hate throwing them away. So,
exactly. Yeah. Or another one. I haven't done it in ages, but, like, make cupcake, like, banana bread cupcakes. But if you put Maltesers in them.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yep.
That sounds like my kind of banana bread cupcakes.
Yep. So, and they have that malty taste, Ovaltine.
Oh my gosh. Right. Yeah. Good. So
you can see where my experiment of putting Ovaltine came into the whole, you can see where it came from now. Ovaltine and change.
You've compelled me to tell this story now about Ovaltine and the trademark. I don't know if you've heard of it. Probably, I'm not sure if people want to hear about this. But so we call it Ovaltine, right? But it came from Switzerland, and here they call it Overmaltine. And I don't know if it's legend or the story goes that it's a Swiss, you know, it's of Swiss origination. And when they sent it over to create it for the UK, someone made a mistake and missed out the malt. So they spelled it Ovaltine. And that's why in the UK it's called Ovaltine, and actually everywhere else it's called Overmaltine. So that's an interesting fact for you.
That's a good fact.
Yeah. Well.
Well, on that note, on the subject of Ovaltine, I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you, Zoe, so much for your time. Like, really, really good to chat to you. Enjoy. I'm guessing the weather's probably amazing there. I'm really jealous. In fact, I know it's amazing because you said to me earlier it was like 30-odd degrees.
It is, yeah.
I'm really, really envious. But yeah, thanks so much for your time, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the chat, and catch up with you soon.